with my student Ryan Aziz, and the paper is here. We've gone slightly further than the paper now. We can do SL3 as well, but I'm going to focus on SL2. So I think most people here already know this quantum group, but we're going to look at it at n of primitive nth root of unity. And normally it's taken with n odd, and that's needed. For example, things like this wouldn't make sense, okay, if n was even. So that's the usual quantum group, these Q commutation relations, usual co-product. At root of unity, you make a quotient, so you get a finite dimensional Hopf algebra, which is quasi-triangular. This is the quasi-triangular structure. And that means you can feed it into Drinfeld's theory, for example. I mean, it is Drinfeld's theory, but you can feed it into constructing a braided category from its representations, and that then leads to non-invariance and to topological quantum field theory, quantum computing, and possibly 3D quantum gravity. Now, the dual quantum group, so it's a five-dimensional Hopf algebra, it has a dual, and the dual quantum group is something that's like a deformation of an enveloping algebra. This is going to be something like functions on SL2 but Q deformed, and indeed it has four generators. They're like the matrix elements. So these ABCD are the generators of SL2, which will be the matrix elements of the defining representation regarded as functions on the group. And they are Q commutative with a Q determinant 1 that tells you it's SL2. And in addition, at root of unity, we have these additional quotients. Now, Lustig considered a much more fancy setting with, for any enveloping algebra, he had defined a divided powers subalgebra and then a quotient of that. Well, using that construction, one can obtain UQG in general. On the other side, you can sort of see that there's a classical SL2 sitting inside. If you look at A to the N, B to the N, C to the N, and D to the N, because of the commutations involving Q, they'll become Q to the N, and Q to the N is 1. So there'll be a commutative subalgebra, which is SL2. And what we're doing is we're quotienting by that SL2 to give this root of unity version. Okay, so the problem, and there's lots of stuff here. I mean, I presume most people here are already postdocs or faculty. So in fact, you all are, right? Everyone here is. So you're probably all familiar with this, right? So somebody say no or yes, okay. All right, so the problem is, you might think it's a technical problem, but it's really important for applications. This guy has a very natural basis, a PBW basis. It looks like this. So the root generators and the Cartan, part of the triangular decomposition of the enveloping algebra. It's important even when Q is 1 in the classical limit. So the question is, what is a corresponding dual basis to this? Now, of course, these are paired through the representation theory. So the pairing of a generator, of one of these generators, let's say Tij, so T11, T12, etc., a pairing of Tij with an element over here, that's very simple. That is just you compute this in the defining representation, well, in the two-dimensional representation, and then you take the ij entry, and that gives you a number. So that's how they pair. But in order to get a dual basis, you would need to do a lot of combinatorics from the representation theory, which was really an open problem. Okay, so that's the problem which I set out to solve, and I'll tell you some applications later on. Now, we're going to solve this using braided categories, first of all. So braided category just means a collection of objects. Again, I think most people who know 2QFT already know what this is. You can tensor product things, you can associate them, and you can flip the order of a tensor product by a braiding. And this will draw all the maps going downwards, and we'll distinguish this one from this one by using a braid diagram. That makes sure that this is not assumed to be the same as that. And then the functoriality properties tell you that you can pull, well, there are various properties. Functoriality tells you that you can pull a map through the braid crossing. Okay. Another identity is the composite. The braiding of a composite object past a third object, which is this, can be broken down into braiding that first and then the other. If you put in the associators phi, then you get a hexagon, which is why they're called hexagon identities. And clearly what you've got, and the last thing is pairing between, an object in the braided category is rigid or has a dual, here it's a left dual, if there's a morphism like this, and indicating the trivial object in the category by nothing. And just putting them next to each other is tensor product. So that's the notation. It's kind of intuitive. And the duality property is these axioms here. So as you can see, what you're doing is you are sort of got this diagrammatic picture looks like it's something drawn in three dimensions. And roughly speaking, isotopic diagrams will correspond to the same morphisms when composed. So basically, you can treat it as if you have this. And this also is the reason why you have not invariance coming out of this. And that's true for any quantum group gives you one of those. Now, we are going to be doing, so most people understand that you get non-invariance from quantum groups. What I've been doing, what I did back in the 90s, is the other way around. We're going to do algebra in braided categories. So that's becoming more and more fashionable. And people who do, I'm not an expert on that, but people who really understand TQFT, like in the work of Vera Lizier, for example, say that actually there is exactly a braided Hopf algebra, that is a Hopf algebra in a braided category that is at the heart of TQFT. And I didn't know that back then, but this was my motivation, that it's part of the true geometry. So first thing you need to do algebra, well, an algebra just means you have a map from two objects. So B is now an object in a braided category. I should be able to multiply things. And I'm going to use this diagrammatic notation. So here I'm multiplying the map, the product on C is drawn like that. I start with two elements of C and I multiply and I get an element of C. That's this dot here. Similarly, the dot for B. And the first lemma, if you like, is that, which makes it all work, is that if I've got two algebras in a braided category, then the product, there is a tensor product of them. And that's indicated in this box here. So how do I tensor product to, what is the product on the tensor product object? Well, I have to braid this object past this one with the braiding, and then I multiply in B and I multiply in C. And that composite goes from B tensor C, tensor B tensor C, into B tensor C. And obviously, if you were doing, let's say, super tensor product of super algebras, you would do the same thing, but with minus 1 to the degrees, and that's just replaced by the braiding. And of course, associativity says that you can replace this branch, multiplying them and multiplying them, by the other order. Well, let's do one thing at a time. Firstly, I'm going to pull that across. That's functoriality. So I pull that across. Then I'm going to reverse the order. So doing that one and then that one is the same thing as doing that one first and then that one. That's associativity. And then similarly on the other one. And then I'm going to regroup. And so you can see that this is associative. This box, tell you that you have associativity of the tensor product algebra. Now, a braided Hopf algebra is the same thing, but now with as well an algebra, at the same time a co-algebra. So as well as being able to multiply, you can also co-multiply. Okay, and I think most people in this room know what a quantum group is. It's something with a co-product. And it's the same thing, but now it's in the braided category. So that has to be a homomorphism with respect to this braided tensor product. So that means that if you multiply and then apply the co-product, it's the same thing as applying the co-product, and then applying the braided tensor product algebra, which was in that box that's applied here. So that's the rule. There's also a co-unit, which basically the co-unity axioms say that you can just strip off this branch. And the unity axiom says that, you know, multiplying doesn't change anything. You can strip off those branches. Now the last thing for, yeah.
Just to interpret these axioms, we think of it as a B mod as being a fusion category with a fiber functor to the braided category by the Schneichian.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, we haven't come to B mod yet. So what's your question? You're anticipating my next slide, are you, or something?
No, I'm just...
So we can have any braided category. You can take a fusion category if you want. Take your favorite braided category. And we're just doing quantum group theory in the braided category.
I just...
But your question sounds like the answer to a question later on. Okay. There's also an antipode. So a Hopf algebra has something like an inversion, which is a map from H into H. And written as diagram, it means that if you co-multiply and then apply the product, it's the same as just basically one. And I don't know if I'm really speaking to people who understand everything already of this elementary stuff. But if you just take, for example, a group, an element G, the coproduct is just the diagonal map, so G, G. S would go to G inverse and multiply. That would be G inverse G, and that should be 1. So that's exactly what this diagram is. So basically, all of group theory, well, not all of group theory, but a lot of group theory can just be translated into diagrams. Whether it's a Hopf algebra or some, I mean, it is a Hopf algebra category, it might even be a group algebra with a different structure on it, but it could just be anything. But really, it's really algebra at the level of diagrams, since it's universal. Okay, so that's the definition. Now, just to show you an example, okay? Can I just ask a question? Because this is old stuff, so has everybody already seen this stuff? So should I just skip several slides? Or who hasn't seen this stuff that would like to see it? Somebody should say yes, and then I'll be happy, but I don't, but if not, would you like to see, are you happy with this? Fine, if you haven't seen it, then you should see it, because it's really beautiful. Okay, and I just apologize to those who haven't seen it, who have already seen it. So the famous axiom for a group is that if you do GH inverse, this is H inverse G inverse. So we're going to prove that at the level of diagrams. So if you apply the product and apply the antipode, that should give you the same as applying the antipode and then flipping the order using the braiding and then multiplying. And the proof is, well, we insert this loop. This loop is trivial, so it would give me epsilon and 1, and they would just be pruned off. So that haven't changed anything going from there to there. And then I insert another loop. Again, this loop is trivial, so it just would be doing nothing. Could prune it off. So that's going from there to there. And then I sort of drag this across. So this gets dragged across to that side. That's this picture. And then I sort of start, that's this picture. Then I re-bracket. So this is the co-product. Co-associativity says that if I branch this way and then, sorry, that's not right, is it? I just sort of drag that across to this picture. Now what I've got here is I can recognize this part of the axiom of a braided Hopf algebra. That product followed by the co-product is the same thing as applying the co-product and then the braided tensor product algebra. So that's the homomorphism property. Go to there. And then once I'm here, I've got a loop. I can cancel it. And then I've got my answer. So I won't do any more proofs like that, just to show you that yeah, go on.
So does it matter that it's this crossing?
Yes, it matters completely. So basically, if you just take any construction in group theory and do it diagrammatically, you've got a 50% chance that it will work. Or depending on how much you believe in the elegance of mathematics, you've got maybe a 70% chance that it will work. It could get tangled up. So there's a particular braiding, and if you need it the other way around in your construction, you're out of luck.
So okay. What would go wrong if I just tried to reflect your...
No, that's a very good question. And in fact, the way I met my wife was giving this talk in 1993 in Prague, and I had it on transparencies. And I said, you've got this theorem, and I just flipped it over and I said, you've got another theorem. And then I flipped that over, I said, we've got another theorem with left, right, reversed. So, you know, get 4 theorems for the price of 1. Okay, so yes, you have another theorem, but it would be a different axiom. It would just be the same theorem in the opposite category with the opposite braiding. It would obey a different crossing here. So if you fixed your category, then you fixed your conventions. Okay? So, it doesn't, of course, you can define a kind of opposite co-product. So you have a new Hopf algebra which will obey something with reverse properties. Okay, the other thing we need, so she was apparently so impressed by that, she married me. So, okay, just to show you maths can work. The product, that's what she tells me anyway, so the product here on the dual Hopf algebra has to be the co-product on the other one. So the way you adjoint maps is you just... imagine they're on bits of string. So this is the adjoint of the map S, is you just sort of swivel it around and then use the co-evaluation and the evaluation that we had before. So just applying the adjoint operation gives you the product co-product. Now, here's where the fun starts. We're going to look at the category of... we're going to start doing algebra, including representations, in the braided category. So a B module of my braided Hopf algebra. Okay, it means that I have an action, which I've called triangle, on any object. So I've given an element of B and an element of W, I can apply it and I get an element of W. So that's an action. Of course, they're all morphisms now in the category, and there may not even be any elements, but they're just done as a diagram. And obviously, the definition of an action, okay, maybe I should have spelled that out, is if you multiply and then apply the action, it's a polarization of associativity. That's the same thing as applying the action and applying the action. Right, that is the definition of an action. That's just the same as associativity, but kind of polarized. And so imagine we've got two of those, and the claim is that you can tensor product them. So there's V and W are both obey that axiom. And now I'm going to define the tensor product action to be I split B, and then part of B acts there, and part of the other part of B acts on W. And that's the box. That's the tensor product action. And I'm checking that it is an action. So if I do that, I use the homomorphism property to give you that. And I said I wouldn't go through any proofs, but I just sort of pull that through and I get this. I use the action property. So here, that product followed by the action, same thing as action. And also on the other side, similar to proof of associativity of the tensor product algebra. So that gives you a model category.
So my question is like, whether you can reconstruct E from this category by the homomorphism?
Yeah, so... So it's a very good question, and you can get all sorts of objects starting with this category. If you take BC, you take the forgetful functor all the way down. If let's say C is HM, modules of a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, and if you go all the way down to HM just by forgetting go all the way down to VEC by forgetting everything, then it will factor through something, and it will give you a ordinary Hopf algebra, which is called the bosonization of H. So associated to every braided Hopf algebra in this category, there will be an ordinary Hopf algebra obtained by Tanaka-Crein reconstruction. Okay? If you take the morphism somewhere else, you won't get exactly B, but you'll get something bigger than B, but it'll contain B in it. It's a little less obvious, but it is worked out. Okay. You should be asking the following question. Well, I mean, even the very simplest question here, take the identity functor and apply to Tanaka-Crein reconstruction. Okay? What do you get? Okay? So it will factor through something. And there will be a Hopf algebra, B, which C will factor through the category of modules. Well, let's take C be a braided category. Then there will be a Hopf algebra associated with this B is kind of, it's just only from the data C. So this B is called the automorphism category of C. So every fusion category or whatever has in its heart, this is exactly what happens in TQFT, has in its heart a braided Hopf algebra in the same category that you were working in.
I see, but if you just view this functor as a, I suppose it depends how much structure you want to put on this functor.
Yeah.
If you view it as a functor of right module categories or something.
This was if C was HM, this is a functor of left module categories, and then you'll get a braided Hopf algebra in the category of left modules of the Hopf algebra, which is exactly what happens in TQFT. So you could basically do anything you like. It's a very powerful set, and that's exactly what we're going to be doing here. So this is in my primer book. You can go a bit further. We'll consider a pair of Hopf algebras. I'm going to call it prime because it may not be strictly dual, but so two Hopf algebras that are dually paired in the sense of at least of evaluation in the category, and then I can define a cross module, cross bimodule, as something which B one B acts from the right and the other B prime acts from the left. These are these two actions, and they're compatible. So if you act on from the right,
then you do this, applying a bit of braiding in the category, and then act from the left. It's the same as the other way around. That's a very natural thing to ask. And this category, the claim is this category is a braided category, another braided category. So this is, if you know about Drinfeld-Yetter modules for hot algebras, this is basically the braided version. You could regard a B prime module as a B co-module. And then you'd be talking about pairs, a data which is both a B module and a B co-module in a compatible way. And that would be a B crossed module or a B Drinfeld module. So this goes back, I think the first person to write this down was Bespalov. In that second point of view. But the point is it's a braided category, and here is the braiding. So there's a new braiding built from the data. This is the braiding in this new category. And now you apply your Tanaka-Crine reconstruction. You go all the way, let's say you have B as a Hopf algebra, H as a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. We build the category here, it's actually right H modules, that forms a braided category. We find a B in that category, we choose any one, and let's say five-dimensional, so there is a well-defined dual, or anyway we find a dual. And then we build this new category, it's a new braided category. And now we apply Tanaka-Crine reconstruction, forgetting all the structure, all the way down to VEC, and we will get an ordinary Hopf algebra. So the moral is, given any Hopf quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, and any braided Hopf algebra in its category of modules, you get a new braided quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, where you basically added on some more positive roots and some more negative roots to what you had previously. And so this is an inductive construction for quantum groups. And since quantum groups are now becoming more appreciative than they were back in the 90s, in a more, let's say, in a more varied role, you need more quantum groups to feed into more machinery, not just specifically Drinfeld UQG. This gives you a way to construct all kinds of new quantum groups. You just take your favorite quantum group, take a Hopf algebra in its braided category of modules, and you get a new one. And by definition, they have a universal R matrix or quasi-triangular structure by construction.
What does it look like? Well, it's built on the triple tensor product. It contains this bosonization. So this bosonization here is a Hopf algebra. What is its structure? Well, its structure is tautological because B has an action of H because it lives in the category. And that makes a semi-direct product. And then for a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, there's an embedding of this category into the category of cross modules. Or Drinfeld modules. So that means there's an induced coaction from the quasi-triangular structure. And that coaction allows you to make a semi-direct co-product. So this guy is both a semi-direct product and a semi-direct co-product at the same time. And so that's part of the structure. So that will appear as a sub-Hopf algebra, both of this one, the bosonization of B star co-opposite and of B will both appear as sub-Hopf algebras. And then I just got to give the commutation rules between B, between this one and this one, and that's given here. So if C is an element of B star co-opposite and B is an element of this, I've got these cross relations. Now this may remind you of something like the, may not, but if you've got very good insight, you can just about see here the EF is K minus K inverse cross relations of quantum SU2. So this is like what our construction is like a, if you do it at the level of diagrams, it's kind of a diagrammatic definition of quantum SL2. And you can see that in the next example because we're just going to focus on that. Before I pass this topic, if B is, of course, you need a B to be five-dimensional to have it strictly quasi-triangular, otherwise you've got to find some way of dealing with it, which you can usually. And the reason is, at some point in the construction, this element appears, which is, I've called it X bar, but it's just the basis dual basis. And if you know about Drinfeld double, this also would appear in the construction of Drinfeld double. But here, this B is a basis of B, not of H, not of a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. Okay. So, may tell you that what's going on here is that what this double bosonization is something like the braided double of B bosonized. It's an ordinary Hopf algebra. It's something like that. But if you take Drinfeld's double construction, you write it at diagrammatic level for a Hopf algebra. It doesn't work. It gets tangled up. So this guy doesn't exist because you were just unlucky. The braidings got tangled, and they only worked in a symmetric model category, not in a braided one. So this guy doesn't exist, but the category does exist. The category of its modules does exist. And the Hopf algebra underlying, so the ordinary Hopf algebra that you would obtain from that category does exist. So that's really what's going on. It's a kind of, some people call this now, I think I've seen at least one person call this the kind of relative double, DH of B. Okay, so that is an alternative name motivated by this point of view. So it's a generalization of the double to braided categories in some sense, but in a very careful sense. Okay, so here's an example. Take H to be the group algebra of Zn. So that just means one generator with k to the n is 1. Q is still an nth root of unity. R is this guy, which is in my pink book, for example, on quantum groups. And so that is makes it a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. And therefore, the category of modules is braided. What is that category? Well, it's a category of Zn graded vector spaces, where that means every object decomposes into pieces with different degree, different grading. And the braiding of two objects, two elements, is given by transposing them, but with an extra factor. So if n was 2, this would be the category of supervector spaces, and this would just be the supertransposition. So this is just generalizing that. Now, in this category, we have a perfectly good thing, which would be the analog of a Grossmann of a fermionic line, which is just the kind of n, it's just the Hopf algebra B is, again, has a single generator, E, but this time E to the N is 0. And it has a coproduct which looks like this. Now, this looks very innocent. I've underlined it because it's the braided coproduct. It means it extends according to that rule. It's not extending as an algebraism in the obvious way. It's extending to the braided tensor product so that the braiding gets in when you try to extend this to products. And it is an object in this category by telling you what the grading is. The grading of E is 1. The dual is essentially identical. The grading of, well, let's say another copy, it looks just like this, but let's generate it as F. That's what B star looks like. And but then the degree of F is minus 1, so that they can be paired. And so then the double bosonization will consist of H, so that's the K, E, and F. With these relations. Now, these relations look very similar. If you don't look at them very carefully, you might think it was quantum SL2. And this is the quasi-triangular structure coming out from reconstructing the braiding. So basically, starting with nothing, we've got the deep structure of quantum, the full structure of quantum SL2. Starting with nothing but the category of Z or Zn, if you want to take away the n, the nth root for generic Q, you can just take the category of Z-graded vector spaces. So starting with the category of Z-graded vector spaces and just the trivial braiding, which has a power of Q in it, and taking the simplest object you can imagine, which is a line in that category, you discover quantum SL2. And so that's it's an inductive construction. So this goes from like zero, rank zero, which is, you can think of this as a C, well, you can think of this as rank zero, goes to rank one. That's the first step of the induction. Out of almost nothing, you get quantum SL2. Now, the other thing is I've put this in a math frac font because it's not quite SL2. Firstly, well, it is isomorphic to SL2, so the usual SL2, when n is an odd root. So when n is 2n plus 1, then you trace through conventions carefully and you discover it is isomorphic. However, this is perfectly valid even when Q is an even root of unity, even when Q is minus 1. So when Q is minus 1, you take this definition. It just differs slightly because for SL2, you would have Q squared minus 2 here. So it's got the wrong power of Q in it. So it looks a bit... And I've also, one thing which you may be wondering about, I haven't got the Q over Q input, but that's just a normalization. I could have had that. The main difference is I've got the wrong power of... Because K is like Q to the H. So this should be Q squared here. And it's not. So roughly speaking, this is basically the square root of Q. So basically what happens is that this math frac Q SL2 for generic Q is Q to the half of the usual SL2. But for even roots, there isn't literally a square root. It just is what it is. There isn't anything on this side. And it's this Hopf algebra for minus one. So it's square R0. It's commutative and so it's neither commutative. Well, there's also a coproduct which looks like this. So it's neither commutative nor co-commutative. So it's a proper quantum group. It has an R matrix, universal R matrix, which is this. It isn't factorizable, but it is strictly quasi-triangular. Okay, so that's a new source of constructions. Now, let's iterate this again. So we'll take, we'll stick to the case of n odd, just for convenience, and suppose that there is a solution to this, that an integer alpha whose square is m into m minus 1 mod n. If I have that, that's a strong assumption, but if I have that, this, for example, it means that among primes n, if n was prime, then this would require that n is congruent to plus or minus 1 mod 12. So it's a strong restriction, but in that case, the quantum plane, this is the quantum plane, lives in the category of UQSL2 modules when centrally extended. So H is going to be, I put a tilde over it because I've adjoined another generator. The CQ to the alpha refers to the quasi-triangular structure. So this is quasi-triangular, quasi-triangular, a new tensor product quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. With the braiding from that tensor product quasi-triangular structure, it then works out that the quantum plane, which is this guy, lives in that category. So if you're not careful about normalizations, you wouldn't realize that. But to get the normalizations to work, you have to make the central extension. And this central extension is the reason, will become the reason why it has one rank higher. But you know, if we don't, we're sort of discovering complex semi-simple Lie algebras and why you need them, if you like, from this inductive construction. So for the quantum plane to live in the right category, we have to make a central extension. This is the quantum plane. This is the coproduct of the quantum plane. Looks very innocent. Remember, it's more complicated on products. This is then the braiding. This is the SL2 braiding that occurs in the Jones polynomial. Then you get the double bosonization. This comes out to be isomorphic to UQ to the minus 1 SL3 if there's a solution to this with alpha bigger than 0. It's what I told you. Alternatively, if alpha is 0, then you just get, you didn't even make the, you need to make the central extension. You just get something else times the tensor product. And this other Hopf algebra has no classical analog because it would be the quotient of SL3 setting the two Casimirs equal to each other. And that can only work for Q cubed as 1. So that's the case when n is 3. And so this results in a different Hopf algebra from anything that you would encounter normally. But otherwise, you get the standard quantum SL3. So in summary, starting with essentially nothing, well, this is the central extension of nothing. So starting with nothing, make the central extension, you get SL2. Make the central extension, you get SL3. Make central extension, you get SL4, etc. Each time central extension is giving you one more Cartan generator, so it's increasing the rank by one. And you're fleshing out all of the, and you can flesh out all the space of Dickin diagrams. How do I know that? Well, since Driffitt already found UQG, I can take UQG of any rank of anywhere I want, and I can delete a node, and then I'll have a sub Lie algebra, and then I can reconstruct. I can add that node back in as a double bosonization, so I can get from the reduced Hopf algebra back. So basically, all of the standard Dickin diagrams can be reached by adding a node at a time. And if I ever had that, if it was ever in doubt, I could always work backwards and reconstruct the braided Hopf algebra that I would need. But there's a lot more. For example, for SL2, I have not only the usual quantum plane, I've got the fermionic quantum plane and I've got the 1-1 quantum plane. So you've got plenty of other braided Hopf algebras that you could choose. And they're just going to give you new quasi-triangular Hopf algebras. Okay? So that's the first takeaway, is since people are now in quantum computing and at the PI and other places are actually working with quantum, we want to have a good source of examples. This tells you how to obtain lots of them, not just the good old standard ones. Okay, now we're going to do the next thing, which is you take all those diagrammatic constructions. Well, actually, not even that. We take the same diagrams. We start with a co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. That is, half algebra with a dual linear functional. So this is a dual concept. And this actually is a more robust concept because UQG, for example, isn't really quasi-triangular except at roots of unity because R doesn't live in the algebraic tensor product. But this applies to CQSL2 for generic Q. It's perfectly well-defined. So it's a better concept. Then you have the category of co-modules instead of modules. So that's this category. That is essentially the same category. If A was dual to H, then this would be the same category. In principle, it could be a little bit different. You take a braided Hopf algebra in the category, so now it would be a quantum plane acted upon by SL2, but now co-acted upon. Okay? And then you take the same construction in this category, and now you reconstruct, but you reconstruct in the dual Tanaka-Crine reconstruction, which reconstructs a Hopf algebra whose co-modules is the category you wanted. And that will give you a new co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. And the formula for those are very, very complicated and they're in the paper. Okay, they're much more complicated than we expected. It's in theory, if you are, because of all these complications of star opposite, etc., it's easier just to redo the category theory than it is to try to dualize the previous construction with those R matrix formulae by hand. Anyway, so that's now been done. And now we take the same thing. The initial example, now it's the category it looks actually very similar. It's actually self-dual Hopf algebra. It's actually, again, the group algebra of Zn, but I'm now regarding it as a circle, an algebraic circle, but quotiented. And now it has a co-quasi-triangular structure. I haven't written it in, but the co-quasi-triangular structure, R of t to the m, t to the n, is q to the mn. So that's the co-quasi-triangular structure, and that gives you the same braiding as we had before. So you get the same category. This time, because of that, you can see you get the same braiding. This time, yeah, we take a Hopf algebra in the category. This time I'm going to call the braided line. I'm going to call it X rather than E for the generator. The dual side is going to call the generator Y. Now you go through this dual construction, and you get that they Q commute. In fact, X and Y commute. And they Q-commute with T. But now the co-product looks pretty remarkable. It's given by this formula. Now, I don't think you've ever seen anything like this before with tensor products in the denominator, okay? But what you have to do is you have to expand this out as a geometric series, and then it actually terminates, and this actually is a polynomial in X tensor Y. Or in x to the various degrees and y to the various tensor y to the various degrees. So this lives in the algebraic tensor product, provided you expand these out using a geometric series. Okay, but this is the only closed form that we've got. Similarly for this one and this one. So these new bases, these new generators that come about naturally from the reconstruction, they look pretty messy from the point of view of the co-product. But nevertheless, you've got the same theorem that CQSL2 for odd roots is isomorphic to the usual CQSL2. And the isomorphism is here. So, So you can see that T is like the D would be the square root of T if you're going that way around. But anyway, you wouldn't necessarily think of these generators without having this theory, especially given the co-product. However, now if you apply it to minus one, you discover you get the same Hopf algebra as before. So in fact, that eight-dimensional Hopf algebra that I told you, that new eight-dimensional quasi-triangular Hopf algebra is actually self-dual. So it's actually isomorphic to its own dual, which is another nice feature. Okay.
Maybe I ask you a question a little back, just let me understand.
Yeah.
You take modules for your double bosonization.
Yeah.
This is a beta category. Do you have an expression for it as a kind of relative Grünfeld center of C sub B?
Yeah, it's, we can just, you can't, I mean, well, you'll have to, I say yeah, because I think I know at least one paper where that's claimed, but I'm not sure, I'll have to. We can go through it properly on the blackboard afterwards, okay? Okay. It's not, I mean, this isn't immediately related to the Grünfeld center, but it is ultimately related. Okay. Okay, so now, but there's one big difference about these generators is, what happened there? Is that these generators weren't just any old generators. This B opposite is dual to the B star opposite over here. And this B star is dual to this B over here. And this A is dual to this H. So this description of CQSL2 is rather special. It has a triangular decomposition looking very much like a Lie algebra, like a PBW basis. The triangular decomposition, but what's more, monomials in X are canonically paired with monomials in E, in F, and monomials in Y are canonically paired with monomials in the other one, in E. So what that means is that they're actually dual basis. So that's the next theorem, that if A is H star, then this new construction is the dual of the previous construction. But not only that, it's in a pairwise way for the triangular decomposition. So that means that this guy is dual to this guy, and these generators are a dual basis to these generators in the following sense. The pairing of x to the I with f to the I is, well, f to the I prime is delta II prime times q factor. I think that should be a prime here, there's a typo there. And the pairing of y with e is delta kk prime times the k factorial. No, that's okay, it's not a typo. It's delta II prime, so times iq factorial. So, I mean, maybe I should have said that at the beginning. In the braided category, I said that c of x mod x to the n is dual to c of f mod f to the n. But what is that pairing in the category of z-graded vector spaces? It is just x to the n, y to the n is m, is delta mn, mq factorial. These are the q integers. And what that means is the co-evaluation element, which I call exp. Well, I'll leave out the bar. So it's just exp is fa tensor ea. This is just, x to the n are a basis. And I've got the value here. So that means the dual basis is 1 over that. So that's going to be 1 over nq factorial, x to the, maybe, yeah, x to the m tensor e to the m. There was an e, f here. I meant f. So this is what you could write as a q exponential x tensor f, if you allow some. So this is warming up for the next topic, which is Fourier transform. But this is the meaning of why I call the co-evaluation element exp. Anyway, we have that here. So this has exactly the same pairing as a braided integer, braided line, among the x and the f, and between the y and the k. And between the t and the k, I mean the y and the e. Between the t and the k, they're not dual bases, there's q to the jj prime. But you can reorganize that. That's just the usual Fourier duality. So you can just reorganize that as an actual dual basis. Okay, so that solves the basis problem. You can take the limit n goes to infinity if you want and try to make something out of it. I haven't done that specifically. Now one application is to Fourier transform, I mentioned. So if you've got any Hopf algebra with an appropriate right invariant integral, and let's say on the dual side for the inverse Fourier transform, we have the dual Hopf algebra should also have an invariant integral, which I call integral star. I want this quantity mu, which is the integral of mu star, where I regard mu star as an element of H, because mu star is a linear functional on H star. So I want that pairing of those two to be non-zero. So this number plays the role of 2 pi in ordinary Fourier theory. And this works for any Hopf algebra. So the Fourier transform is just to integrate the canonical element against H. So let's say the canonical element here is an element of EA tensor FA. That's the element of H tensor H star. And then the Fourier transform will go from H into H star. And it's just given by multiplying by H, arbitrary H, and integrating it. And that will give you an element of H star. And the adjoint Fourier transform will be this one, and the composite of the two will be 2 pi times the minus sign. So this S antipode plays the role of the minus sign in Fourier theory, and this mu plays the role of 2 pi. And this works for any Hopf algebra. But of course, you need the basis and dual basis, which we now have. So in our example, I'm going to take my Hopf algebra, which I've probably presented this back, because it's probably F star. But anyway, my Hopf algebra H is now going to be this one, rather than A, never mind. And it's going to go to the dual, which is this guy. And so just taking this pairing, and now what is the integration? Integration is going to be the Berezin type integration, which says it's zero except for the top degree. So the integration on this kind of Hopf algebra here is integral x to the n, x to the m is zero unless m is n minus one. So that's like a Berezin integral. So it's the penultimate degree. Well, the top degree is zero, so it's the highest degree that you have. So that is a translation invariant integration, it turns out, for the braided Hopf algebra. Well, for what you want. For this Hopf algebra structure, and then you get this Fourier transform. So the mu is the thing of interest here. This turns out to be this. So n minus one is this top. Remember, q to the n is one, so we wouldn't want n here anyway. This is the role of 2 pi. Now, another application is people interested in the quantum double, which is built on H tensor H star. And then from that point of view, the Drinfeld double braiding, which we use in TQFT, is given by the canonical, this exponential element, but with one leg regarded in D of H, and the other leg also regarded in D of H. Okay, so that becomes an element of D of H tensor D of H, and that's Drinfeld's double. But now, so again, we've got formulas for it now from the explicit pairing. Okay, now I've got a little bit of time, I think, haven't I? Yeah. So I just wanted to just finish this braided thing. Once you've done all this, I think you've got enough material to go away and do some interesting calculations. But I just want to mention another topic, related topic. We could continue a bit further now that we've begun on this line. We've got an integration on, we could imagine an integration on B. In this example, it would be the top degree. This is the axiom for a left invariant integral, but we could try that. We could do that on a braided category. It also makes sense in a braided category. So that you'd read that as a diagram. Assume that it has a dual. Then we get the braided Fourier transform. It's just the same formula that's given by this formula down here. You take the co-evaluation element, exp element, integrate it against an element of B, and you end up in B star. So that's the braided Fourier transform in that box. And here I'm checking the fundamental lemma of Fourier theory, which is that if you act by on B there's an action of B star. B star is, so basically differentiation, if you apply the coproduct and then evaluate against B star, that is an infinitesimal displacement. So that is differentiation. And I've got things to work. This is in my old survey article on braided Hopf algebras. This all works, and you get B becomes a right module algebra in the braided category if you put in the antipode here and a crossing. So there is a right action of B on B star. And if you apply that action and then take the Fourier transform, it's the same thing as taking the Fourier transform and then right multiplying. So multiplication in the dual becomes right translation beforehand. So a differential operator becomes right multiplication. And that means that is the key property of Fourier theory. And so that works in the braided case. Actually, this is an old paper with Achim Kempf, who's linked to the PI. And I don't think I want to give you the proof because I haven't got much time, but you can read about it. This is using the various properties, you get this little lemma, and we use that lemma here in this proof. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's yeah. On a group, you ask for a translation invariant integral, and that translates into saying that if you apply the coproduct and then you integrate, that's the same thing as doing the integral and one. Right? And that, because if you evaluate that against any element of H of the dual Hopf algebra, that will be saying that the integral is invariant under under translation by that element. In other words, this will be the property F acted upon by element of the Lie algebra of let's say of the group. This is right translation. If the Hopf algebra was, here it's B, was functions on a group, on a group. Then the property of integration that you want to be left to be invariant is if you act by element of the group by translating the function, you should get the same answer as if you didn't act. Right? That's what it means for an integral to be translation invariant. Okay? And if you strip away the action and you view that the space waiting for the group element to be placed there, you view that as a coaction, so you strip that away, and you view that as an element of C of G, waiting to be animated on a function, then what I've got is what I've got, then this action is not just any action, it's right translation in the group. And that's expressed by the coproduct. So this says, it says this one. This becomes this. F, this is the coproduct. If I put a group element here, I'd get the actual action. And integrating it should give the same answer as just integrating F directly. Times, well, this one would appear because it would be technically it's an element of it has to live somewhere in the Hopf algebra. It's just a constant function. So this axiom that I assumed here, which I wrote here, that's this axiom here. Well, I would swap left and right. That is exactly the statement that is translation invariant. So a translation invariant linear functional is exactly what I described here. And so that's the key ingredient for integration. Just as in classical group theory, the Haar integral is the key ingredient for Fourier transform. So it's exactly analogous. But here, it's on my five-dimensional Hopf algebra, and the Haar integral is just given by this formula. But you can check it is the Haar integral for this braided Hopf algebra. And it can be shown that the Haar integral, if it exists, is unique. So this is the braided Haar integral, okay? But that was a very good question. Now, we've got F and F adjoint. So one way around, if I apply the Fourier transform, and here's the adjoint Fourier transform, F and F star, apply the adjoint, go through blah, 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 we get this, and I can pull that down because it's a morphism. But if I do the other way around, F star F, I do the same thing, and here I get tangled up. So the adjoint F is not precisely going to give you the inverse of F star. F star is not going to quite give you the inverse of F. We will have it one way around, but we won't necessarily have it around unless we make some more assumptions. If you don't, then it's just a little bit more complicated, but it's still invertible. So here's an example. I've done the same example, but I've actually changed n to n plus 1. So it's an n plus 1th root of unity, just because it's from a different paper. I apologize for that. So this is the Hopf algebra B, and here's what I had before. This is the exponential element. I told you it was a Q exponential. This was the evaluation pairing given by the factorial. And the Fourier transform, braided Fourier transform now, looks like this. So it really looks like an ordinary Fourier transform. So this is the braided Fourier transform. The adjoint one looks very similar. Mu, it just comes out to be the Q integer factorial. I mean, n is the top degree. So it comes out to be n factorial. And now the adjoints work, except that there's an extra d, which d is the monomial degree operator. So that's the complication from this being slightly tangled up. So that's Braided Fourier theory. And I just wanted to give you one. So you can do this and it works in the same way, and you can do a lot of quantum group theory in the braided world. But I just wanted to give you one application to quantum group theory. And since I began 5 minutes late, I can go 5 minutes later. Is anyone rushing out? If you feel you have to rush out, feel free to, but I just have a very, just a couple of slides just to show you an application of this to real world geometry. This is to the geometry, not going to be the geometry of quantum groups. So A is a co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, or in fact, it could be any Hopf algebra to start with. A differential calculus on it means a bimodule with a D operation, with a derivation. So that's the analog of one forms. You can then extend that, usually you can extend that to a differential graded algebra and then have a cohomology. A metric is an element like this, and so a one-form tensor, a one-form. We want it to be quantum symmetric under wedge. We want to have an inverse, which actually forces it to be central. Sorry, it's a bit flashing it past. So Edwin Beggs and I have been doing a lot with that. I won't do that today. But you can develop that. You can talk about connections, Riemannian geometry, etc. But I'm just going to talk about a very old problem, which is the Hodge operator. So H is now a Hopf algebra. I've got an exterior algebra on it. First theorem you have is that actually it's spanned by the left invariant one form. So the left invariant one forms on the Hopf among the differential forms, they form a super braided Hopf algebra in the cross module category. So this actually is what is called sometimes called a Nichols-Voronovich algebra. If there's a top volume form, so if this exterior algebra has a top degree, and if G is invariant, then you get a Fourier transform. And the way we do that is, well, this top volume form allows me to define integral. So I just consider B as a braided Hopf algebra, lambda. So lambda is the space of left invariant one forms with wedge product. And I regard that as a superspace, if you like, or a super braided Hopf algebra. The integral on it will be the top degree. The top degree is the volume form. So if it exists, I've got the Berezin integral, which says that the integral of vol is one and everything else is zero. So then because it's a metric, the metric means that I can identify lambda with lambda one with lambda one star. So that means I can identify this Hopf algebra becomes self-dual. And therefore, mu star, integral star is not the same as integral. They're both given by vol. So the element mu for my braided Fourier theory is just this guy. And one can show that it is invertible. And so then the composition of, so Hodge is simply Fourier transform on this space. So this is a new philosophy. But if you think hard about it, on a Riemannian manifold, what is the Hodge operator? Well, it sends things of degree m to things of top minus m degree. And that's exactly what our Fourier transform does, because it's integral of something of degree m times x. This has different degrees in it, but part of that, if this has degree n, this has m, this will be degree top minus m to be non-zero, to be the volume form. And therefore the result will be Ea, Fa, this is my Fourier transform. Therefore, this will have degree top minus m. So in fact, there's the Fourier transform on the exterior algebra, that is the Hodge operator. That's a point of view on what is the Hodge operator. So if you do that in this, since I've run out of time, let's do it for the quantum SL2. So for quantum SL2, there is a four-dimensional calculus, going back to Voronovich. It's got four generators, A, B, C, D. These are left invariant one forms. These are their various relations. This is the coaction because they're rotationally invariant between them. This is the volume form. There's one thing you might surprise you is there's an extra element theta, which doesn't exist classically. So it's four dimensional. There is a metric, which is non-degenerate. You'd go through the construction, and just to run out of time, here it is. Hodge takes you a degree one into degree three, etc. It behaves like a four manifold. But what's really remarkable is that in the middle degree, it's a map from omega 2 to omega 2. And as you can see here, after normalization, it obeys the Q-Hecke relation. So most people would think that the Hodge operator should be square to the identity. And there were lots of people trying to construct the Hodge operator and not really getting anywhere canonical. But this construction is completely canonical. All I did was I just chose my exterior algebra, my differential calculus. Then, and if it has a top form, that gives me a canonical Fourier transform. And this gives you, and if it has a metric, then this is the canonical Hodge operator for that metric. I made no choices apart from choosing the calculus on the Hopf algebra. So therefore, I believe this is quite canonical, and it's quite satisfying that it obeys the Kuhaki relations. And it's also a reason why it wasn't done before. Okay, so I've gone over my time. I'll stop there. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
I'd like to ask if you can pick essentially diagrams for the algebras. You said that this construction is equivalent to adding extra nodes on the diagram.
Yeah.
How literally is it possible to take that? For example, can you distinguish a sort of a branched diagram? Can you say, I want to add on a branched node at this point,
well,
rather than one on the end?
If the two Dynkin diagrams differ by adding, if they're both valid Dynkin diagrams and they differ by adding one node, then this construction will always, you can always get from one to the other by double bosonization. And you can see that in great, I've done that in gory detail at the Lie-by algebra level, but the same thing works in general. And the reason is that you're just adding a few more. If you've got a Dynkin diagram and you're adding another one with one more node, right, then this one, this will be your H, and this will be my additional B. And there'll be additional generators for B star. I'll be throwing them in. And this will give, I mean, this will not just be B, this will be not just a simple root, but all the descendant roots as well, commutated with the new simple root. And that will, and so that, and that's how it works. You can see that in the SO3 example. So you can always work backwards and reconstruct the braided off algebra. So for example, you could take, you know, F or G2 or something and work out what is the underlying braided off algebra that gets you to G from G2. I think none of these things have really been worked out, but they're very calculable, especially at roots of unity. Does that answer your question? Okay. But the point is you have a lot more than just these. These are just the kind of these are the braided off algebras with classical limit, which are then which are going to recover the Dynkin classification. But you can take completely non-standard braided off algebras, like the fermionic. Did I do the fermionic one? I don't think I did. Well, it's in the paper. In the paper, we do the fermionic plane instead of the ordinary quantum plane. So you get a new, instead of SL3, you get this kind of thing where the additional root generator is a Grassmann type.
So is it a supergroup?
No, it's not. No, it's an ordinary Hopf algebra. It's an ordinary quantitriangular Hopf algebra because I'm constructing it that way.
Well, of course, but a quantum supergroup will also be an ordinary.
No, quantum supergroup won't because it will have the transposition in the homomorphism property. In a super Hopf algebra, you've still got this diagram. So that means it's homomorphism, but with a minus one here.
Okay.
Minus one to the various degrees. So unless it's completely bosonic, it won't. So, but there probably is a super version. So that what you get is probably related through some process called transmutation to, it's a way of shifting categories to, I don't know, SU1/2 or something, so it probably can be related.
Are there nice examples that are not in classical theory?
Yeah, I think there are lots. There's also the 1-1. So there's the 1-1 fermionic quantum plane, so one bosonic, one fermionic. If you want something completely fresh, that isn't like a line. You could, for example, take this construction here. Take, you know, your favorite braided category, reconstruct the braided off algebra in it, and then if the category was modules of a Hopf algebra, you would get examples. But I don't think anyone's really worked them out. I think the braided planes that people are familiar with are the standard ones. There's no particular reason for that. Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a standard one. If you apply this construction to H itself, so Hm, take the automorphisms of Hm, where H is like UQG. Then what you'll get is the braided version, what I call B. This is all in the pink book, B of H, and this is H as an algebra, but it has a new coproduct. Now, if you do the dual version of that, so you're doing the automorphisms of MA, A is now co-quasi-triangular, like CQSL2, And you do the reconstruction in the co-way so that you get a co-object. I guess it's a co-end. Then you get you'll get the braided version, BQSL2. And BQSL2 has generators alpha, beta, gamma, delta, but it has relations which look different. And in fact, as an algebra, it's essentially isomorphic to UQSL2. But it has a new algebra, but not just a new algebra, actually one isomorphic to one you had before. And it has a matrix co-product. Delta is a matrix one. On the generators. But now this braided plane actually is Q-Minkowski space. So the braided version of SL2, as you could imagine, is actually Hermitian 2x2 matrices, if you add a star structure. So this is actually Q-Minkowski space. So the very natural proposal, it has an action of the Q Lorentz group, the QSO13 on it, etc., and it is a braided plane. But now you can take, sorry, this is not, this is a Q-Minkowski space modulo the Q determinant 1. It's actually a hyperboloid in Q-Minkowski space. Now the other thing you could do is you could add one more relation. Q trace equals 1, and that would be picking out a constant time slice. So it's hard to draw, but this would be a sphere. A fixed time in the mass hyperboloid would give you a sphere. And these are exact, and you've got a free choice of what constant equals a constant. So this two parameter family is a sphere, S with a parameter. And these are exactly the two parameter Podlesch spheres, which are normally found by a much more complicated route. So they have a very, so what I'm saying is that this is not actually really answering your question, but you could consider this a root of unity, and we would have all, it's still a kind of plane, but it's much more complicated than the usual quantum plane. It's not much more, has a much richer structure. And in particular, it also relates to things like other non-standard quantum spheres, etc. So I think if I was looking for examples that were a bit more unusual, I'd probably turn to that one. But I think I'm sure that there are combinatoric ones that one can think of, you know, on graphs and things that no one's ever even considered, just from a category. Okay. Right.
So can we also take like the double
edge? Yeah, I mean this construction interacts with the double as well, because this is a Hopf algebra here. So what this is actually, this whole thing could be viewed as a quotient of the double of B, of H acting on B. But that's got kind of too many, modulo something. So it is related to the double. But of course, you can put anything you like here. So yes, you can put here the double of H if you want. But why would you want to? It's already complicated enough. Okay. But this double position does interplay with the Drinfeld double in a certain way. But the point is that it avoids you all this unnecessary. Taking the double is too big, and this just adds the bit you want instead of having to then get something too big and then having to identify the cartans, etc. So. But it's closely related, yeah. Okay, so I mean, for example, yes, you could. Okay, if you really want, you could take a finite group, take the double of the finite group, functions on S3. Okay, take the double of the group, which is now a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. You can look for quantum planes in its category of modules or whatever, and that would be interesting. Relating to group theory, and then you could also define B to be the braided version, so the braided double of C of S3. So that's now a 36 dimensional braided Hopf algebra, which doesn't look anything like a quantum plane, and this lives in the category of modules of the double. And then you can if you want, you can use this to find the dual basis, etc. But I think for finite groups, you can probably find the dual basis more directly anyway. You don't; it's easier. But you have to ask yourself why you're doing it, and you can basically do almost, you can do any combination of the symbols. But it's a question of why you would want to. Okay. Right. Thanks very much. Okay. Thank you.